Hey, everybody. This is Doug Robertson, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, with another edition of the Southern Fried Soccer Podcast. You're hearing this on March 8th, and on Saturday, Atlanta United is going to host the New England Revolution at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Television time starts at 7:30. Kickoff is around 7:37, somewhere between 7:37 and 7:39. You can follow my coverage on Twitter or X at Doug Robertson AJC, on Facebook at Atlanta United News Now. In today's podcast, you're going to hear from manager Gonzalo Pineda, Caleb Wiley, Bartosz Sliszcz, and Brooks Lennon. I'm going to answer a whole lot of your questions. We didn't have a podcast last week, so we got 2 weeks worth of questions to get into. And I want to remind you that I'm starting a new feature on Wednesday. I'm calling it a new feature on Wednesday, in which I ask y'all to give to me something you want to rank related to Atlanta United or soccer, whether it's kits or traditions or players. And y'all sent me in quite a few already. Wednesday, we're going to do best moves made by Atlanta United's front office. And so then every week, I'm going to come up, I'll write out one of these lists. We'll post it Wednesday on the AJC. That'll give y'all a day or two to read, and then give to me your feedback, and I will read it on the podcast, including how you would rank moves, your thoughts about my moves. We're doing this because when Atlanta United plays on a Saturday, we get the players on Tuesday and player and a manager on Thursday. It's hard for me to come up with enough stories out of Tuesday's availability to fill 2 days, particularly this early in the season when there's not a lot going on. So kind of came up with this idea, thought it might be fun, interactive, give y'all a chance to express yourselves, gives me a chance to express myself. The paper likes it when I write. I like it when I get paid. So it's going to make everybody happy. So I hope you'll enjoy. Again, Wednesday is going to be me ranking like the five best moves made by Atlanta United's front office in the team's history. We'll come back the next week with the worst moves. And then after that, I got a really good one about other Atlanta athletes who I think would be good soccer players and to rank them. So this is kind of the vein of ideas I'm trying to mine. Feel free to email them in. I can't promise you, it's going to be the next one up because I'm going to kind of do them as the order I get them, but we will get to it eventually. So thank y'all for submitting those. If this is your first time listening to us, please make sure to follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode. This is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean Breeze. Tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. So let's just run through some numbers real quick before we start listening to some of the audio. Atlanta United, as many of you know, is 0-1-0 following its 1-0 loss to Columbus in week one. It did not play in week two. New England is 0-2-0, one goal scored, four against, with losses to Toronto and DC, which is not something any team wants on its resume. But it defeated Alajuelense in its first match in the round of 16 in the Champions League. They come back, I think it's in 2 weeks, and play again. So New England has some really good players. Carlos Heel, who has absolutely destroyed Atlanta United, 3 goals, 4 assists in 8 appearances against the team. I wrote a little bit about him today. Again, you can find that on AJC.com. Or if you look, go into my Twitter and go through the timeline at Doug Robertson AJC, you'll see it there. They got Shankley, DeJuan Jones, Nacho Heel. They got a lot of good players on this team, so don't sleep on them. It should be a good match. It's supposed to be, I think it's a wide open stadium on Saturday. So it should be a fun atmosphere. If you see me, walk into the stadium, say hi. The weather's not supposed to be great. Traffic is likely going to be awful because Biden and Trump are in town. I would encourage you, if you have alternate transport such as MARTA, I would take it. And all right, let's get into the audio. Here's Caleb Wiley on what the team learned from the Columbus match and the bye week.
I think just being on the same page. I could first just start off saying that Columbus is a great team. They really know what they're doing. They have a clear playing, identity, and it's hard to stop. So just being on the same page, really communicating. We've had lots of, film last week, and I'm sure this week, to make sure that going into this weekend, we understand what we're supposed to do, and we're confident about it. So yeah.
Wiley was one of the players that we spoke to on Tuesday. He had an up and down game against Columbus. I think that's a fair assessment. Pretty good in attack, particularly in the second half. Struggled a little bit defensively in the first half, but Columbus does that to a lot of teams. They're very good with their movements. They don't take up traditional spots on the field. They're the closest thing I would think to a European team that likes to have the ball and play possession style soccer as there is in Major League Soccer. Here's Caleb talking about the age-old problem of trying to stop Carlos Heel.
Yeah. The best way is, preventing him from getting on the ball. I mean, I know it's easy to say, and, his job is to get on the ball. So, we have the players to stop him, and it's about, us doing that.
Now, against Columbus, Wiley was playing with two teammates that he had not yet played with. In Derek Williams, who was the left center back, and Bartosz, who is one of the two defensive midfielders, along with Tristan Miyamba. So, the communication, it's going to take a couple of games for it to be smooth. But here's Wiley talking about what it was like playing with those two guys.
I think, they're pretty easy to play with. Derek is constantly talking with me. It's nice to have a center back who's really communicating with me. And Bartek, you can tell he's very experienced. He's done well in preseason. So, I'm looking forward to, what the rest of the season holds.
And here's Wiley talking about some of the early challenges of playing with those two.
One of the weaknesses, how Columbus were set up, they were, they like the runs in behind. Mm-hmm. So always, keeping an eye on, the runners in behind. Cucho was checking in, so it was hard to really know who's supposed to defend and whatnot. So just having an understanding of, who's jumping, who's not, who's covering. And like I said, that just comes with, games and trainings, and it'll develop over time.
While he was one of the players, I think it's 52, 53, something. It was a lot of players named to the preliminary U.S. Gold Cup roster, which is a nice compliment to him. Yeah, he's also got the Olympics possibly coming up in Paris. But here's Wally talking about that.
It's always an honor to to be part of the group, to be called up, to be even be in that conversation. But right now I just got to focus on this team, this weekend, and go from there. Yeah, a little bit. I've talked with Marco, the U23 coach, talking about what's next, the next camp, but nothing really in terms of, the Olympics, but that will come
right
down the road. Yeah.
Here's Bartosz on what Atlanta United learned from the Columbus match.
Everyone didn't expect this result after the first game, but it's the past, and I think that the most important is in front of us, because I think that this away game was, I heard that it was the most difficult in this season. So, yeah, I think that everything is in front of us. That after the second half, I saw that we have a great team that we play with. We created the chances. So, I hope on Saturday will be the great event in front of our fans, in front of our stands. I heard that a lot of great things about the first game here. I hope we'll be a lot of people and they will help us to win first game in the season. Yeah, I think that our stadium will be a different game than away, and that's all.
And how he thought he performed in the Columbus match?
First half, we didn't feel good, I think individually and also team, whole team. So I think we improved a lot in the second half. And I'm satisfied with the second half, but first half, it wasn't my, let's say, good level. Right. So, yeah, I missed also easy balls, so I wasn't happy after the first half. But after the second half, I was, let's say, okay, because we lose, but right. I think it was okay the second half. But I think that we changed a little bit in the second half, that we pressed the 1v1. In the first half was, I think we gave them too much respect, and that's why it was look like that. And yeah, I think in like I said, on Saturday will be a different game.
And then similar to Caleb, he was playing in front of guys he's never played with in a real game before, with Stian and Derek kind of trying to form that defensive hub in the middle. I was curious about his self-critique.
Yeah, I think that everyone is new in this club, and we need also the time to cooperate like much better, but I think it's not bad. And I feel then that they're, let's say, experienced players. And yeah, it's, I think, very fun to play with them, because I can also learn from them. Yeah.
I think it was Tyler asked Bartosz what he's learned about the city, and he started talking about the Polish community, and it was a pretty interesting answer.
I've met also them in the in the Atlanta story, that we have meeting with the fans. Uh-huh. Also, I've met Polish fans, so yeah, they told me a lot of about Atlanta, that it's like great place. If I need anything, I can text them. They gave me the number, so about anything really, to I don't know, restaurants, story on, etc. So yeah, it was only the positive about the about the city. Yeah.
Bartosz was also a Tuesday interview. Today we got Pineda and Brooks Lennon. Every player was out on Atlanta United's pitch on Tuesday. That was when, I think that's when Etienne returned. It was Etienne or Mosquera, one of the two, returned to training for the first time. So this is the first time that I can remember in which every Atlanta United player has been healthy. Pineda thought there was a time last year when every player was. I'd have to go back and look. It's hard to figure that out. But here he is talking about the last time the team had a fully healthy roster.
I think last year we had a few of those. Maybe it didn't last too long. But yeah, I think last year was very good in terms of injuries. What I recall is just a few muscular injuries and that, and a couple knocks. But I think it was, well, actually the numbers said that it was the best year in terms of muscular injuries for Atlanta United. So I think it was pretty good. This year, I think we've been pretty good on that. So we expect to continue like that.
Of course, it's great to have a fully healthy roster, but the headache from that is you got to figure out who's going to start and who's going to make the bench. And Pineda offered some insight into that.
Well, the form takes a lot on that, because we have, I think, a good group of players that can impact or can be available to be starters. I think I feel like I have a very good group of players that are capable of. It's for me more the form, the confidence, how we see the connections also at times, the pairs, what matters. The connection between a couple of players at times is better than others, and at times that plays into the decision making. But what I would say is there's competition. I can guarantee you there are a few positions where it's really hard to pick one or the other. But we'll try our best to pick the best lineup possible. Yeah, to have them sharp. I think now that we have everyone available, for us the emphasis is everyone is sharp, everyone is confident. So today, tomorrow, we will be focused on them.
Of course, it's going to be Pineda's job to try to figure out how to limit Carlos Hill's effectiveness.
Well, I would say number one, Carlos Hill have had a lot of success against a lot of teams.
Yeah.
We are one of those. He's a fantastic player. I have a lot of respect for him and for his team. They're a very good team. They have very good players. He is probably the brightest of all of the players there. But again, the focus for me is more us. It's more us. It's more how we play. It's more us keeping the ball more than them, being more dangerous than them. And in that way, we give them less the ball to New England. Hopefully, they see less Carlos Hill, and from there, he can create less chances for them. The other thing is, of course, whenever they have the ball, we have to be aware of where is he on the field. I'm not a big fan of man-for-man marking the whole game, but I would say that, yeah, we will have something specific for him where we can be aware of where he is, and from there we can be more aggressive, because, of course, he's he's the highlight of the team, and we need to be aware of that.
Brooks London was first to the podium today. He always gives really good answers, which is very much appreciated. But here's Brooks on what they worked on during the bye week.
Yeah, we worked on ourselves. I think the focus on this year is to focus on what we have to control in games, and we're really excited to play here, at the Benz on Saturday, and we're playing a great team in New England. They had a really good result last night in Champions League, and so we focused on us and what we can do to improve and certain positions for different actions and things that we might see in the game against New England. So yeah, we were just training on that.
And then the last time you have to hear me ask about Carlos Hill.
Yeah, he's obviously a very dangerous player for them, and in the league in general, he's a world class player. The focus is going to be heavy on him, especially when he's floating in areas. He's a player that likes to go kind of wherever he wants, so we need to make sure that we have eyes on him at all times, because he's done very well against us, like you said. And we're going to have a player like that on every team that we're going to go up against. We're going to have world-class players. You see the league now, every team has very good players. So like I said, we're focusing on ourselves, not so much on our opponents this year, and how we can go into the game and control it and get 3 points.
Last Friday, U.S. Soccer announced that 8 MLS clubs, after negotiating with Major League Soccer and I'm assuming the USL, are going to participate in this year's U.S. Open Cup. If you remember, before the season, MLS Commissioner Don Garber had said that MLS teams were not going to participate, that they could use their next pro teams if they wanted to. He had concerns just about logistics, schedule congestion. Of course, MLS forced the schedule congestion with the formation of this League's Cup. But now 8 teams are going to be in it. Atlanta United is going to be one of the 8 teams. Here's Brooks talking about the U.S. Open Cup.
Yeah, I'm really glad. Every new opportunity you get for a new trophy is exciting. And that's a tournament that Atlanta United has won in the past. And, we're looking to win it again, I think. It's exciting to have us in the tournament, and we get to play against opponents that we might not be able to play because it's not in MLS. So we're really excited to be involved.
And I wanted to follow up with him about just if he had any concerns about schedule congestion. You have 34 Major League Soccer games, at least 2 in the League's Cup, at least 1 in the U.S. Open Cup. Of course, if the team does well in League's Cup and U.S. Open Cup, it's going to keep adding as you go.
Yeah, we know it's going to get congested at certain points of the season, and that's why we need everyone. Gonzalo harps on it all the time, is we need everyone together. You never know when your minutes are going to come, so that's why training every single day is so important, taking care of yourself off the field. If you're not getting minutes, like I said, you got to be taking care of yourself, because those minutes are going to come this year, whether it be MLS, Open Cup, League's Cup. Some guys are going international duty, so there's a lot of games, and so it's important to have that longevity and be able to take care of your body.
All right, this is Southern Fried Soccer from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We're excited to announce a great deal for a greater Atlanta. For a limited time, subscribe and you'll get digital access to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for just $1.99 per week for life. As long as you keep your subscription, you have access to the substance and soul of the South, including breaking news and in-depth investigations, food, sports, business, and more from AJC.com every day for the rest of your life. Subscribe now by going to AJC.com/start. That's ajc.com/start to take advantage of the South's biggest and best deal. This is for new subscribers only. And, you know, we do good work. I like to think we do fantastic work. I like to think that we cover sports in Atlanta better than any other outlet. Things like, I mean, everything from things you wouldn't probably even notice. Spencer Strider's curveball, that was Justin asking about that. Justin had heard about it, asked about it. It's those little details that we really try to work hard to pursue to give you the most extensive coverage we can. So I hope you'll consider subscribing. It's $1.99 per week. AJC.com/start. Appreciate it. Now we're going to get into the mailbag. I wanted to first tell y'all, we did not know this, but the voicemail line had gone down. It was sending your messages to a server that we could not get access to. So now I need you to put this number in to your phone. Stop what you're doing because I'm about to ruin. It's 404-810-5297. 404-810-5297. And you can again start yelling at Daniel. Send in your crochet orders. Tell me your favorite Andy clips or quips from the Andy Griffith Show, and we will play them on the next podcast. I'm going to start with Nick, friend of the podcast. I'm curious as to your thoughts about the US Open Cup drama. Nick is going to offer his two thoughts now. He is glad Atlanta is in it, and there are no excuses for the team to not make at least a semifinal. Well, I don't know about that. It depends on the draw and the bracket. But he says, second, my slightly cynical belief is that MLS and Apple simply did not want Messi and Miami to play in a competition that they don't control. While I'm aware that CCC isn't controlled by MLS and Apple, it's still a continental competition with perhaps more prestige. That's the stinking suspicion I have. What say you? Thanks as always. I have no idea if MLS and Apple were thinking that. I would be surprised because Miami controls its roster, not MLS and Apple. If Tata decided that he did not want Messi to play because of congestion and other things, that he won't play. There's still a chance for Miami's kids, which they have several really good ones, to play. So I don't know if I buy that theory, Nick, but you know, I'm all for a good controversy and I'm all for a good theory. So I can appreciate the thought you put into it. As for my thoughts on the US Open Cup drama, I think it's very disingenuous of Major League Soccer to pull out of the US Open Cup a year after they start the League's Cup, a tournament that nobody wanted, as far as I know. Nobody said they wanted. Now sponsors want it because they want the eyeballs. Fans, I don't think, wanted it because we were already getting that with the Champions Cup, previously known as the Champions League. Had Major League Soccer pulled out of the US Open Cup 3 years ago and then last year decided it wanted to do League's Cup, that would have been, the optics would have been certainly much better than what they did. Right now, they look a little highfalutin, for lack of a better phrase, like they are above the US Open Cup, which is the oldest soccer tournament in the country. I think it was a bad decision by Major League Soccer. You don't like the optics. You don't like the travel. Well, I'm sure y'all can figure out ways around that. Expand the rosters. Let some more of the kids play. There were a lot of solutions that to me were a lot better than pulling the teams out. Was it professional? Alan says, questions for this week. Did we confirm that we used our one-time buyout this year on Eric Lopez? You're using we as for Atlanta United. I am not a we. I'm an independent journalist. Yes, Atlanta United used its buyout on Eric Lopez. Alan continues, you asked for some non-Atlanta United questions. I was wondering how Miami was able to sign Redondo to replace Farias. I thought the rule was the replacement could not cost more than the injured player. I don't know if Redondo is the injury signing replacement for Farias. I'd have to go back and look at the press releases and look at the news done by Michelle Kaufman and Franco Panizo down in South Florida, who cover Miami very, very well. Congrats to Michelle on her APSU awards. If he was, there used to be rules about the salary had to be within a certain number of the other player's salary. I don't know if they changed that for this year. I've had no occasion to look at it yet because Atlanta United has not had to deal with it. So I'm sorry I can't provide a better answer for you on that one, Alan. Jeremy, friend of the podcast, says, my question is this. Is there somebody in the organization you have wanted to interview and have not been able to? What would you want to speak with them about? It's not really, well, it's a combination of the person, but also transparency. I would love to talk to Arthur Blank about Atlanta United and revenues, and is the team turning a profit? How, if it's not, how much further away? What are the biggest expenditures? I would love to be able to get a P&L statement on Atlanta United and sit down with Mr. Blank or Tim or Steve Cannon and just kind of go through it. They'll never do that. No professional sports franchise, unless they're publicly traded, would ever do that. But that's what I would love to do. I think it'd also be fun to talk to Jonathan Spector. I would love to go on a scouting trip with Jonathan Spector and just write about the experience, not necessarily the players per se, because I know Atlanta United, you know, and teams have this bizarre proprietary beliefs about that kind of information and stuff that there's nothing new under the sun, is my opinion. But I would love to go on one of those trips with those guys and just kind of write about the whole experience. That's a great question, Jeremy. Thank you. On to Sean, friend of the podcast. Which non-U.S. men's national team eligible player would you most like to see to come to Major League Soccer? If it's just anybody, I don't know if this is a pipe dream type question, but obviously Kylian Mbappe or Erling Haaland would be so much fun in Major League Soccer. Other than that, if you're talking kind of second tier type players, I'd have to think on that a little bit. There's so many good. Thomas Mueller, I think, would be a lot of fun in Major League Soccer because he's so honest. He would be a hoot. But which U.S. men's national team player do you think needs to come to Major League Soccer? Now, this is going to be a long answer because I find the coverage of U.S. soccer fans of one particular player to be almost cultish at this point. And that player is Gio Reyna. You watch Twitter or X after Gio Reyna plays, and you get some of the most amazing takes based upon absolutely nothing that I have ever seen. He'll play 10 minutes, not create a chance, not take a shot, and you'll see tweets. He's obviously a world-class player. Like, based upon what? How is he a world-class player? He's going to be a part of the U.S. men's national team for the next 10 to 12 years. Well, the U.S. men's national team was good before Reyna. It's good right now when it's not using Reyna, and it's going to be good if Reyna never comes to the team again. I'm often guilty of people hyping up players and me looking at the player and not really seeing it. I would like to think most of the time I get proven correct. Sometimes I'm absolutely wrong. With Reyna, I just haven't seen it yet. He's had some very good, he had two good seasons with Dortmund, three awful ones with Dortmund. There are reasons that no other first division teams throughout all of Europe wanted to take him on loan or sign him other than a team in Spain and Nottingham Forest in a relegation battle. I don't know what the issues are, but there have got to be issues. We've heard Jesse Marsh talk about he needs to show more effort. We heard Berhalter talk about Reyna in training. He was such a bad influence that his teammates wanted to send him home. That's how bad of an influence he was. You know that if his players reached out to Berhalter to try to get Berhalter fired when he didn't get selected for that, they've had to have done the same thing in the past when he was at Dortmund. That could not have been a one-off. So if Reyna wants playing time, come to Major League Soccer, find your groove again. You can do it on loan, go back to Europe. But right now, to me, he's not an automatic inclusion into the U.S. for Copa America. And if he's not an automatic inclusion for Copa America, he might be in trouble come the World Cup. Art says, in the event that the team sells Thiago Almada during the summer transfer window, who is the best on the roster to be a temporary replacement until the team can bring in a new number 10? It doesn't seem like we have anyone on the first or second team rosters that play that position. Thanks, and careful riding around on the e-bike. This is one I've been asked a few times, Art, and I don't really have a good answer. If I had to guess, I'm always a big fan of don't start moving a whole lot of people around in a lineup. Just bring your next guy in, play him, and let everybody else play their natural positions where they're confident. So that would be Firmino. If you want to start playing the dominoes, then you could put Saba Lobchenidze in at that position, or you could think about Tyler Wolf. But I think Firmino, who played all the preseason at that position, would probably be the guy. He played well, too. I think Firmino scored 4 goals in the preseason. And, you know, that's with really not having had a lot of time playing with most of the teammates before. So that's pretty good. He's mature. He's older than you probably think. I think he's 25. So he has a lot of experience. And I don't think the moments would be too big for him if he were to play as a 10. Atlanta United would have to probably change his playing style a little bit. It wouldn't have to run as many things through Firmino as they do for Almada. And that might not be a bad thing. I think it stresses a defense a lot more when they don't know who's going to be pulling the strings and they don't know where the attacks are coming from than when it's obvious where the attacks are coming from. That's not a knock on Almada. That's not a knock on Pineda. When you have a player like Almada, you do that. To not do that would be kind of dumb. But that's kind of what I think. As for the e-bike, I walked down to a store at the bottom of the hill today and went and talked to a really good guy named Keith down there for about 20 minutes about e-bikes and things I should look for and price tags and stuff. So I'm still shopping. I'm trying to find out if they have if they're bike racks at Mercedes-Benz and not the valet. The valet opens after I'm already there and closes before I leave. So that doesn't help me. So I'm trying to figure out if there are bike racks at Mercedes-Benz, because otherwise this doesn't do me a whole lot of good. Other than going to Trivia on Tuesday, where we dominated on Tuesday and won. So congrats to the Trivia team. On to questions. Ben and Sherry, friends of the podcast, say, I've been thinking about one aspect of the season opener. This is Ben talking. And I'm interested in your take on the subject. Ben says, let me start by saying that I am not a Gonzalo Pineda basher. He seems like a nice guy and a reasonably competent coach. Not great by any stretch, and so far, not one capable of competing for championships. But he could still grow into a coach that can reach a higher level, and I hope he does. One criterion I've always used to judge coaches is how well they make mid-game adjustments, especially at halftime. So far in his career, Pineda has not done this well to my observation. Now, I'm going to disagree with you on that, Ben. I think he has made good halftime adjustments. My criticism would be the in-game adjustments, particularly in the first half when the opponent is doing something that Atlanta United didn't plan. They usually don't make any adjustments till halftime, and I don't understand why that is, particularly when you have a team full of international caliber players. But anyway, on to the rest of your question. Then at Columbus in the season opener, Atlanta did make a dramatic improvement in the second half. So great. But the TV announcers for the game pointed out something interesting. Pineda came back out to the pitch some minutes before the players did. The announcers seemed to speculate that the players had their own meeting after Pineda left the locker room. Now, players have team meetings sometimes without the coaches, but I've never seen it in the season opener. So my question for you is, do the players call their own meeting at the half? And was the team's improved performance in the second half a product of that meeting? Or was it something the coaching staff did or said? I don't know. It's not unusual for coaches to come out early or even much later. And it's really not unusual for the players to talk at halftime. There's a leadership council on Atlanta United. Some of the veterans, they may have just talked to the guys about, this is what we're seeing. This is what we need to do. This is how we need to implement what Pineda has asked for us to do in the second half. It could have just been the guys were hanging back to get it retaped or to tie their shoes again or get one more gulp of water. And Pineda was done talking, so he just went ahead and left the locker room. If you watch college basketball, there was a trend because coaches have to do whatever they think another successful coach is doing. They would call a timeout, and the head coach wouldn't go to the timeout. He and his assistant would stand over to the side, and the players would talk. So then you saw everybody in college basketball doing that. Never mind that most of the teams in college basketball don't have the same level of talent as the coach that started doing this. Or at least the one I noticed started doing it first. And that was Coach K. On to Fletcher. Hello, Doug. It's been a while, but I've been enjoying the start of the season podcast. Well, thanks, man. I hope you'll tell your friends. I hope you'll give us a rating on Apple and Spotify, because that helps us grow. His question is, if Atlanta has an open... I'm going to reword his question a little bit, because part of the logic, he didn't know a rule that MLS has, so I'm just going to reword the question. If Atlanta has an open DP roster and Mbappe becomes available this summer as a free agent, he thinks he works well in the United system and would love to see him as the number one target and, of course, on the discovery rights list. A bad joke in, or a bad system, in his opinion. All jokes aside, What could we see the team do with that DP spot? A replacement for Almada, especially if he leaves. Well, Atlanta United can't open a DP slot unless it sells a DP player. But yeah, having Mbappe, that would be a hoot, man. I did back of the envelope math like 2 years ago on Messi. Like, how much would it cost Arthur Blank to get Messi here? And I figured it'd be like $200 million. So then I started doing back of the envelope math about just you open the stadium. This is the average ticket price. Get the percentage of revenue of the shirt sales, percentage of the revenue of concessions. And that $200 million gets made up really, really quickly. And I think at the time I had said Messi would only go to a team that has an NFL-sized stadium, particularly for those reasons. I obviously was wrong. He went to Miami. But anyway, so if Atlanta United were to get a DP slot open, I think they would fill it with whatever they sold. So if they sold Almada, they would go out and buy an attacking midfielder. If they sold Yurgos, they would get a striker. I'm not saying they are, but that's what they would do. Stian is the other third center back. If they were to sell him, I don't think they would buy another DP center back. They would probably hold on to it to see what happens. But that's my thinking on that. Thanks to keep up the good work, says Fletcher. Thank you, Fletcher. Jason says, while Atlanta United is by far my favorite team, at one time my daughter lived in the apartment complex next to Q2 in Austin when it was being built. I so badly want to go to Austin. So I bought season tickets for Austin as well. In your opinion, which Wolf is better, Tyler or Owen? Tyler, of course, plays for Atlanta United. Owen plays for Austin. Do you see them both playing for the men's national team? We have Tyler, who has made an impact coming off the bench. They have Owen, who has made an impact starting. Is Owen better, or is the younger brother playing for his father, starting on a weaker team, whereas Tyler is fighting for a spot on a solid squad? By the way, I was really wishing that since Tyler was a homegrown, we get his brother as well. I'm thinking he moved out to Austin with his family, and Tyler was old enough to be left here. I think that's probably correct. As for do I see either one of them playing for the U.S. men's national team? Not unless they can start getting a lot more consistent minutes and be a lot more impactful. I think they're both good players. I don't know which one is better. It's too hard to quantify. But the U.S. men's national team is getting better and better. I still think it's maybe not as good as some people think. You know, it hasn't really won anything more than the U.S. teams in the late 80s, early 90s were winning. But we'll see what happens. It's the depth that the U.S. needs. It's got to start developing more depth. So that if a guy like Reyna can't crack a starting lineup in England, then you don't have to put him on the team. You've got another guy who is starting on a good team in Europe, and you can call him in. Dave says, if you were casting the Andy Griffith Show with Atlanta United players or coaches, who would you cast in which roles? Thanks for the great coverage of the Five Stripes. And in that vein, Pat says he would cast Saba as Barney Fife and Guzan as Otis, but he doesn't know why. Oh, that is pretty good. So you probably have to go, let's start with the youngest guys. Let's start with Opie. So the youngest player on Atlanta United would be one of the homegrowns. We'll go with Luke Brennan there. Then you've got Floyd the barber, who kind of just goes into these non sequiturs and his answers all the time and rambles on for a while, which is pretty funny on the show. I'm sure it would drive me crazy in interviews. I'm trying to think of who does that in interviews. We don't get a lot of long, long answers from guys in interviews, but we'll go with Brooks. He gives long, but he gives really good answers. So that's not a knock on you, Brooks. It's more just a reflection of the length of the answers. I'll go with Barney for Saba. Guzan is Otis. Why not? Andy, let's say Garth is Andy. We're not going to get it. We're not going to do Aunt B. I'm not going to get into that. And we'll do, who's the head of PRO now? The referee that everybody hates. He can be, Weaver, the department store owner who evicted the family because they missed one mortgage payment. On to Joe, who says, I've listened to your podcast for years and I'm a loyal subscriber to the AJC. Well, thank you, Joe. I appreciate both things. I try to read all of your articles and listen to all of your podcasts. Thank you. You do a fantastic job. You're a fantastic reader. And this is our question of the week, by the way. He says, I must have missed this, but did Carlos or Pineda come out and say what the goals are for this season? Is it to win the cup? Is it to finish at least fourth again? Ken's article, let's call Atlanta United what it is, an average MLS team, brought up a great point in that the team has been top five in total salary for the past 4 years. I didn't realize this, but according to Ken, of the 25 MLS teams besides Atlanta United that existed in 2020, 22 have finished in the top four of their conference at least once in the past four seasons. Ken says, yikes. Seems like top four is a low goal for this team. As a season ticket holder from day one, I would expect the team's goal is to win the cup every year. Anything less is pointless in my humble opinion. Anyway, I would love insight into what Carlos and Pineda are aiming for this season. So no, they want trophies. And they say top four because top four comes with home field advantage, at least in the first round of the playoffs, which as we know is very, very important for Atlanta United because it does not play well. It does not get results most of the time on the road. Got 10 points last year out of a possible 51. That ain't great. I think it was 10. Something like that. Not great. So that's why they want top four, so they can get home field advantage. They want to win cups. I mean, I wrote a story today about Atlanta United is in the U.S. Open Cup. Brooks Lennon, Gonzalo Pineda said, we want to win the U.S. Open Cup to go with the one they won in 2019. Leagues Cup, they want to win Leagues Cup. If there's a competition, they're professional athletes, they want to win. So that is their goal. Now we will see what happens. It can start on Saturday. They got to beat New England, a team that's already lost to Toronto and D.C. They got to beat them at home because the schedule is only going to get tougher after this. You get Orlando, which got blown off the field by Miami last week. You've got Cincinnati. You've got Toronto, which just beat D.C., which Toronto was just god-awful last year, but they still have a ton of talent on that team. They got two Italian national team former players starting on that team. They're not a team to mess with. You got DC, again, another tough team in the next few weeks. Got Chicago, much improved Chicago, at NYCFC at Citi Field. I will not be at that game. I will be here covering the She Believes Cup. We're going to have somebody else covering that for us. Philadelphia, a team which Atlanta United struggles with. So Atlanta United's got to get these 3 points here. Again, send in your list of things you want me to rank and write about, and I'll write about that, and we could interact about that on the podcast. I hope you'll consider subscribing. That's ajc.com/start, ajc.com/404-810-5297, 404-810-5297. Follow me on Twitter at Doug Robertson AJC. Follow me on Facebook at Atlanta United. Need to say that I got a whole long list of questions from one particular person, and I want you to know, because we had so many questions on this, I'm holding some of these for some other times when we don't have as many questions, and I'll get into them, but they are fantastic, and I want to thank you. As always, hug your loved ones, communicate with your loved ones, be empathetic, strive for awareness. This is Southern Fried Soccer. Y'all take care.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.